You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for October 19th, 2021. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of The Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is a webcast and podcast where we dig deep into the clutter that stands between people and the lives they want to be living. We aim to make sense of where so much stuff comes from in the first place, and we offer strategies to slow down the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we choose to keep. We rely heavily on the questions and topic suggestions we get from you, our viewers and listeners.
If you're joining us in the Zoom meeting for the first time, you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and suggestions there, and I'll relay them to Gail. Okay, let's get right to it. We want to start, as we usually do, by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Deck the Halls, Only Less. The assignment was to assess your collections and decorations with a view toward creating a simpler and less cluttered display this holiday season. We want to hear from our participants in Zoom and Facebook. Did anyone downsize a decorative collection this week? Please let us know in the comments. We actually got quite a few comments this week from viewers telling us about their plans to reduce stashes of holiday directions. Nancy on YouTube wrote, I found during the pandemic that I put out much fewer decorations for Christmas and it still looked festive. It made me realize I don't need as many things as I have stored in bins in the basement. So I will definitely thin the herd. It will be easier as one of my daughters lost all of her decorations due to mold particles in her basement. And the other daughter just moved from a condo to a house. So she has more places to put things.
How great that you have two kids that are ready to take decorations away from you. It seems like the perfect moment in time for you to go through it all and let the excess volume go. For those that don't have kids waiting in the wings to take things from you, ask around for any teacher, especially at the elementary school level. Any holiday decor from Halloween through to New Year's will be welcome in an elementary school classroom. You can also check with a daycare, a senior center, a senior living facility, anywhere where lots of people live or hang out, and the budget for decor is likely minimal. Those in charge of making it festive will appreciate anything free. So dig through your stuff and start letting things go and let them go live somewhere where they can benefit a whole room full of people. Thanks for sharing your story with us about it. Appreciate it.
Lorraine reports that she gave away two ream paper boxes full of Halloween and Thanksgiving.
Ooh, yay, Lorraine. Good job.
And Connie says she has set aside things for the pre-holiday bazaar at our parish at the end of November.
That's a great idea.
And Anya says she has one big box here, so she skipped the tittle.
That's okay. If you're down to one box, you're good.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Good job.
Okay, well, we have a lot to talk about, so I'm going to move on to the next topic, and we'll come back to any more comments we get on that. And we're going to start today by clearing a goof up on my part from last week. So I have to take the spotlight off Gail so that you can see me again. And as sometimes happens, last week I forgot to take the spotlight off Gail while I was doing show and tell. And so the only people who saw what I was showing and telling were the people who were live in Zoom. And so I want to show you once again the wonderful gift that my sister Jane gave to my partner Jaime for his birthday this year. It's a paint by number kit that she ordered from paintablepictures.com made from a photograph that we provided. And so can everyone see me now?
Gail, am I? Yes, you're so there.
Here is the, this is what the canvas looks like. And it's, you know, as you can see, teeny tiny, all the teeny tiny little numbers. And it comes with all the paints that you're going to need, little numbered pots, like, you know, typical paint by number, and some appropriately sized brushes. And then here's what the finished product will look like, which is a photograph that I took of Hardy, which they've photoshopped a little bit to make it, you know, paint by number friendly. So very cool gift. And that the URL is paintablepictures.com. And we forgot to, I forgot to take off my, the spotlight last week. So the, no one on YouTube or Facebook got to see it. So
you're going to put that in the chat, and then we can also put it in the show notes, the link to the website, paintablepictures.com.
I can do that.
It's such a great gift. I mean, this is truly the perfect gift for anyone who has a beloved family pet. It's an activity. It's personalized. When you're done with it, it's a painting. I love this idea so much. And from our discussion about minimizing the volume of gifts given, it's a great option. So thanks to Sister Jane for giving us this fabulous idea. And anybody that you know that has a pet will think it's super cool to have a paint by number picture of their own pet. It's a brilliant idea.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about today's featured topic. Sooner or later, most of us find ourselves dealing with stuff left behind by loved ones, and inherited clutter confronts us with some big prickly emotional challenges. Today, Gail is going to share stories from the estate clutter trenches where she has spent a lot of time recently, and will suggest ways to make the clearing process easier for yourself, your spouse, your parents, your heirs, your children, whoever your survivors are.
So I last talked about this topic of dealing with an estate in 2015, during the year after my mother died. I talked about it from the standpoint of being my own client and what that was like, even as a professional, and how hard the struggles that I had in that process. I have some distance now from that experience. It's been 7 years this December, and I'm currently working on an estate clear out right now. So it's time to talk about it again. My current client is an only child. She's in her early 60s, and this was her family home that we're working on. She grew up here, and although she doesn't live here anymore, she has long roots and decades of memories in this house and this neighborhood. One parent died a decade ago, and her second parent died this past spring. So it's only been a few months since she became the executor of their estate. She tried to manage it herself over the summer, and then she finally threw in the towel and gave me a call. And I was super grateful for that. I want to cover this topic in terms of the typical problems she's encountered and how we're doing it better, hopefully. I'm hoping this will give you a good reference list of things to do and potential problems to avoid. So the first one that comes up when I start thinking about her job is that sooner is not always better, at least when it comes to an estate. She started working on the house a couple of months after her parent died. That meant while she's actively grieving her loss, she's also trying to do practical things like filing a tax return and notifying everyone about the death and go through the contents of the house to start the process of emptying it, ultimately for sale. The grief and the work are at odds with each other, and there's no getting around that. So if your family can afford to wait, waiting a little while at least is better for everybody, I think. You're better able to do the work if you've had more time to integrate the loss. Sometimes your circumstances prevent this breathing space. The loved one lived in an apartment and no one in the family can afford to cover the rent while you wait. Or they live in assisted living and the facility needs the apartment right away. Maybe the house is still mortgaged and there's not enough income to cover the mortgage while you grieve. So the house needs to be sold right away. In this case, you'll have to deal with the house contents right away, and I'm sorry that it'll be harder for you. I think she was trying to be a responsible child and executor, and she thought that she needed to jump on it right away. And the truth is, the house is paid for, and she could have left it for a year and come back later and started this process, and it would have been fine. She didn't call me till she was well into trying to deal with it. And so waiting didn't seem like a viable option to her. And so we then went about making the plan. But as she's working on it, I know that she's having a harder time making decisions. She's keeping a lot. She's crying a lot. And so it is a process that is difficult for her, even as we're doing the practical work of trying to get through it. So if you have the breathing space, I would make the plan that everybody get some time off before they start diving in to solve the problem of dealing with the house and the contents. And if you don't, then I just hope that you can make space for the extra emotion that comes with the process and hopefully get some support, knowing that you're not going to be at your best while you're trying to do the work.
Didn't you and your sister experience like being a little out of sync in terms of one of you was eager for the closure and one of you would have preferred to let things go a little while longer? Yeah.
My little sister felt the, because she was the executor, she lived locally where my mother lived. And so she was the executor of the estate. And for her, that list of things to do felt like a huge pressure of getting things that she needed to get done. And so that pressure was very stressful for her. And so she was ready after we had the funeral in January, she was ready to immediately turn around and start working on the house. And I was like, oh my God, wait. And I would have been perfectly happy to let it sit there for a year. The house was paid for. It wasn't a problem. And I would have been perfectly happy for it to just sit there and wait for a year to go by before we came to take it apart. But she was feeling very, very stressed. And when I realized that, we sort of met in the middle, and I went away in January and came back in the middle of May. And then I was there for 10 or 11 days in May. And we went through the house and made all of our choices about what was going to stay and go and all that stuff. And then I went home, a moving truck came to my house, and Leisha was basically in charge of moving things to her house, carrying up a whole bunch of stuff to donation and loading up my moving truck that was coming to Houston. So she did all of the work that came after to empty the house, but it's right. I would have been perfectly happy for it to marinate for a year before I came back to try to tackle it. And even so, we did fine. And it wasn't a process that was unsuccessful. We got it done and we sold the house and all was fine. But I would have loved to have had a little distance from her death before we started going through her stuff. And there you go. You're going to have that problem. And here we are. It worked out. It was all fine. And that was my personal version of, there was two of us and at least we got along well. So that was a good part. We were able to do it without the distress of being at odds or fighting about things, which was great.
Yeah.
Thank you for the reminder. I know that you want to deal with the valuables. This is the second thing that comes up. Speaking of deciding what comes and what stays and what goes. I know everybody sort of dives in ready to deal with, we need to put our hands on what's valuable, but that is the least of your worries. Truly, you're packing and you have an estate sale coming and you're going to be moving and you're selling a house. So you don't want to miss the big picture here. We always head for the good stuff and talk about how to deal with it, how we're going to sell it, who's going to get it, how we're going to get money out of it. Everybody gets really focused on the little fraction of contents that have some great value that needs to be dealt with and focused on specifically, but that is a small fraction of the contents. An estate clear out is a move, plain and simple. You're emptying a home of all of its contents and furniture, and you'll likely need a moving truck to do it. It's not an easy job of pulling the cream of the crop off and leaving the rest, although I've seen that happen too. a friend's family came to her apartment after she died, and they pulled what little they wanted, and then they walked away, and they left the rest for the landlord to clear out, which means that the landlord had to pay a moving crew and have a truck come, and some, he had to pay people to empty it all into the truck and drive it off somewhere. And it likely all ended up in a dump. And that was still, it still required the physical work of all of the stuff coming out of the apartment. So I know everybody's all worried about who's getting grandma's engagement ring, but that is not your biggest problem. Your biggest problem is, how are you going to move out of this house? And it is a move, and people forget that, that unless you, unless somebody in the family is inheriting the home and moving into it, then they have a different move to deal with. They have to move out of the place they're living now, and they have to empty their house and get into the house that they're moving into. So either way, somebody's moving. If the house stays in the family, then somebody's moving into it. If the house isn't going to be kept in the family, it's going to be sold, then you guys are moving out of it. And so there's a move happening, and you got to pack, and you got to sort, and you got to ship, and you got to get a moving crew, and you got to have an estate sale, and all those things are happening. So just don't lose sight of the big picture here. There's much bigger project than the 15 things that everybody's fighting about who's going to get. As you're going through everything, it means you're going to be finding a lot of treasures. So don't forget, you have to pack and transport and unpack everything you decide to keep. Can you really add 25 boxes of goods to your house right now? Do you really want to put a bunch of stuff in storage for a decade? I had a moving truck come to my house when we separated mother's stuff out, and I ended up with my third of the stuff that I wanted. We basically, she took about a third, I took about a third, and a third of it was sort of donated away to some places where they were raising money to support things that mother was interested in. So the moving truck came to my house, and we added several pieces of furniture in, although I probably got 8 pieces of furniture out of it. Several boxes of things that I had to unpack and add them into my contents. And so we had just moved in February and into this house, and then the moving truck showed up in June. So I ended up unpacking some more and adding another, you know, 15 boxes, 20 boxes of stuff to my own contents of the house was a project. It's not a light thing to go through somebody's house and take 25 or 30 or 50 boxes worth of stuff and bring it into a place that you have that's already full or that's already outfitted, or you already have enough stuff in it to function anyway. And now you're adding in a bunch of stuff in on top. And the sneaky thing that my sister did was she also found some boxes of photographs, a whole bunch of mother's photographs. And she decided that I was going to be in charge of dealing with those. And so she slid those boxes of photographs onto my moving truck as well. So when it arrived, out came these, you know, 10 boxes long under the bed boxes, all full of photographs. And she was like, yeah, I sent those for you to deal with, Gail. Awesome. Thanks so much. So I couldn't begrudge her because she got left. I know, bad sister. She got left with the bulk of the physical work of emptying the house. And so I couldn't really complain, but it is a lot of stuff to deal with, and it is a lot of stuff to add to your house. And so when it's early on in the process, you probably keep more than you would later. So if you're having to do it while you're grieving and you're having a hard time and everything reminds you of that person, then you're going to keep a whole lot more because they're all going to feel much more special and precious. But then you're going to have to pack all those things up. Deciding that you're going to keep it is not the end of the trail. You are then going to have to put them on a moving box and put them on a truck and take them to your house locally, or take them and ship them across the country in a moving van. And so it's not just finding the treasures. It's also whether you are going to be able to integrate all those treasures into your house. And I did a meetup years ago talking about a little small 10-minute video that a woman had done about emptying her mother's apartment when her mother died and what that process was like. And she had two brothers who didn't live in town anymore. And so when they came, one brother only wanted one shell. Another brother took, you know, like a box worth of stuff. He took one box of stuff. And then she kept taking all of these things that were marked to be donated. And she would look at it and go, oh no. And she would write keep. And she lived in New York, in the New York area. She lived in an apartment. And so the moving truck showed up and barfed out like 30 boxes of stuff into her apartment that was already full and small. And so then she was surrounded. The end result was she was completely surrounded with 30 boxes of stuff that she couldn't deal with, unpack. There was no room for her. And it was the best that she could do in that moment. So partially that happened because she did it right. You know, they had to get out of the apartment and they had to do it right away. And so she did that process too early to make better decisions. One of the things that she practiced in home was here was her mother's dentures and her eyeglasses. And she had a hard time sending those on and not bringing them home to look at them. It felt too personal. It felt like it had too much of her mom's DNA on it. And so she couldn't let those go. She wasn't going to wear her mother's dentures. She wasn't going to wear her mother's glasses. It was totally a keepsake. But it was that level of attachment to things that had 30 boxes delivered to her little apartment that then she was surrounded by. I also had a client locally here who, once her second parent died, she went through and there was a whole bunch of furniture that she felt like was antique. And she thought, oh, these are really valuable antiques and they're super important. And I can't fit them into my house, but I'm going to put them in storage and then I'll deal with them later. So in the moment, right after the death and emptying the house, you know, 20 or pieces of furniture went into a storage unit. And then she paid the storage bill for a decade. So a decade went by, the 20 pieces of furniture sat there and waited, and she ignored. By the time she'd spent 10 years paying storage, she could have bought the furniture 15 times over. And then she hired me to come in and arrange for these things to be sold. And so I listed them out on, at the time, I can't remember whether it was Marketplace or Neighborhood. Marketplace probably didn't exist at the time. So I can't remember where we put listings out and had people come and look at them, Craigslist probably. And, you know, we sold this one for 100 and that one for 200 and this one for 50. And we sold those things. Nobody made any money. Nobody got rich on the furniture sale. And the money that she made on the furniture ended up paying my fee to make it happen, to take the photos and make the listings and talk to the people and do trade the emails and then go meet them at the storage unit and have them pick it up. And I spent a bunch of time disposing of that furniture 10 years later. And so her net result was zero. She got nothing out of it. And it was a big project that she didn't do herself and paid somebody else to do. And it was basically she flushed 10 years of storage fees down the drain. So as you're going through and looking at all these treasures that you're finding, all these things that you have to keep that are important and valuable, don't forget, you're going to have to do something with them on the other end. If you keep it, you're going to have to put it somewhere. You're going to have to pack it, transport it, unpack it, and live with it. And storage unit is not the ultimate solution. Let me just tell you that right now. Okay. The next thing to talk about is, what if there are two or more heirs? So my current client is an only child, so she's not having to argue with anybody about the contents or the strategy or the plan. How do you manage letting the multiple heirs pick their favorite things? How do you share the workload when not everyone is willing or able to help you with the backbreaking work? This is something that happens a lot. The person that's the executor knows that there's work to be done, and they start trying to do it, and they start trying to enlist the family members to come and help them. And surprisingly, no one is willing. There's not a mad rush of people coming to help.
Shocking.
Shocking, but true. And I think that lots of people, it may not even be the executor who is the person that takes on the job of emptying the house, but it usually falls with greater weight on one person of the siblings or the heirs. And they sometimes are successful to get some of the family members to participate. But most often the person that steps up to say, this is my job, I'm going to take care of it, or I'm going to spearhead this project, becomes the person that manages the whole project. And surprisingly, the people that will not help you do the work also will complain the loudest about not getting what they want out of the project. So you're going to have people who don't want to do the work, but they want to benefit from the contents. And so being prepared to stand in that chair, the chick in charge, you're the one doing the work and managing how the siblings talk about the stuff and who decides what, it's going to be a process that you're going to have to deal with. And you're going to have to deal with it while everybody is sad, everybody is grieving, everybody is facing all of their unresolved issues with their parents and realizing that they can't resolve them now because the parent is gone. And so there's going to be a lot going on while everybody's going in there. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, armchair commentators too. As you do the work, they're not willing to come and do the work, but they're sure willing to tell you how to do it and thinking that you should be doing it a specific way and yelling at you because you're not doing it, but they're not actually going to come and help you do it. So there's often a lot of arguing and struggling over who gets what, how it gets done, and who is actually going to come and do the work. And you're going to find yourself standing in that place going, oh God, I need help. And no one wants to come and help.
Well, and anger is part of the grief process.
Yeah.
More for some people than for others.
That was totally my sister's response. She, you know, I was very sad, depressed about it. My sister was very, very angry. And it tied to, you know, my mother died so close to Christmas, and that made her really, really mad. And of course, everybody knows you don't vote for when you die. You don't get a choice, right? My mother didn't do it on purpose, but my little sister's anger response was her way of grieving about it. That's where she went. And so you're going to be dealing with a bunch of people who already have their own family dynamics happening. And then you're going to throw deep sadness and loss in on top of it, and everybody's emotional response to grief, and oh my God, what a cocktail, right? It's just a big old mess. So knowing that's happening in advance would be helpful, and being prepared, if you're going to step to the front of the line and take on the project of emptying the house, then you're going to have to figure out a way that you're comfortable managing to let the heirs pick their favorite things. And you're going to have to manage the task of the workload and not worry about everybody's data entry, their commentary that they're going to make while they're not willing to come and help. Leisha and I did very well, and we were able to be there together, go through stuff. And each of us, when both of us wanted something, each of us in that moment were able to say, you can have it, you take it, that's fine. Like neither one of us felt like we were being stripped of something we really wanted. And so for us, we were very lucky that it worked out just fine. We were able to do it without too much conflict. And really the only conflict for me was she wanted to do it sooner rather than later. I would have been much happier doing it later. But lots of families fight about this stuff. And so I think making a plan in advance about who's going to come and help, talking about it with your siblings, like who's the estate manager and who is going to, like people have jobs and families and they live across the country and they can't come in one weekend. They can't fly in for a weekend and empty your mom's house. Like that's probably not going to be a good process. It's not going to be helpful. So having a longer range plan about how to tackle it, how many people are going to fly, is it okay to spend the money to hire people instead? Having those conversations while the the parents are still alive means that you can have the conversation in a more practical way before you throw the grief in on top. And so, and it also allows you to sort of see the cracks in the armor. You can see where people are going to fight, where people are not going to be available. Like you can get a preview of where it's not going to work or where it's going to break down.
Who's going to hide in denial?
Yeah. And who's going to freak out about, you know, everybody wants the same painting and that kind of stuff. So you can sort of have those conversations in advance and try to get an idea of what it's going to be like to plan the project. And I'm speaking from the point of view of the person who recognizes there's a plan to be made and wants to start trying to deal with it. And so I think if you're that person in your, that you're in your head thinking I'm going to be the one that's going to be on the front line, then it's to your benefit to have these conversations while you can and have them with the parent as well. What do you want us to do with your stuff? Do you have a list of people that you think who should get one things? Can, do you want us to mark things with dots? You know, have these conversations so that your parent can weigh in about how they want things done. My client did have some conversations with her mother who had died earlier. And at the time the mother said, I want to support these particular charities and I don't want to have an estate sale with people walking through the house. That bothered her. And so she was able to sort of make some requests about where things got donated and to not have an in-home estate sale. And so she had some marching orders, so to speak, from her mother that now it's been a decade and she's, you know, executing those requests. And that at least gave her a starting point to feel like I'm doing something that my mother wants done. I'm giving to these charities. And that was something that was important to mother. And it makes it feel better to the person that's trying to be the decision maker, that they're doing something that the mother, that your parent cares about. And so having those conversations with your sibling about, are they going to come and help? And how much are they going to come help? And are they going to be able to leave their job and kids? Or are they going to say, I can't leave the job and kids? And how can we ever, you know, when you come home for the family, can you mark things that you want or go through things in the process, you know, during the holiday or whatever, so that you have some idea what and how, what kinds of things you want. And then making the plan for the person that's in the front line, when all these people fall away and are not available and can't be helpful, then what are you going to do? And how are you going to do it? And who are you going to call on? And the truth is, you can't expect the neighbor to show up. This is the next thing I want to say about it too. Of course, you can't do it alone. And she couldn't do it alone. And when she called me over the summer, her foot was actually in a cast. She had broken her ankle and she was walking around in her dad's house trying to do stuff with a broken ankle. It's like, you can't do this alone with an injury. Like she couldn't even stand up for very long. And so it's like, so first of all, go home and let your foot heal and get the cast off. And then let's talk about this. Like, it's not even reasonable to try to do this while you're here right now. That's just crazy. So go home. And she did. And, you know, she's been back and we've done our first round of work. And so A, she was an only child. B, there's no more heirs. And C, all of her neighbors around the house are the neighbors that were her parents' age. So they can't really come and help. There's not like neighbor free volunteer help that are going to come and do that. And even if you get a volunteer who says, oh, sure, I'll help you, that's no problem, that friendly volunteer really has no idea how much help you need. And they want to play with the good stuff. They don't want to deal with all the stuff. And they won't last very long for free. So I just was at a bead retreat in Colorado in September. And I was talking to someone who had volunteered to be helpful in a situation like this. And she sort of quietly confided in me that she was really regretting her offer to help, that she had been over there several times for a couple of hours at a time. And she was probably on her 10th or 12th visit or something. And there was so much stuff there. And she kept putting things, boxing things up for donation. And then she would come back and some of the stuff would be back out again. And she was really fighting. I'm volunteering my time for free because I'm trying to be helpful. And this project is way too big for me. And I am sorry that I agreed to be helpful. So you're going to burn out your friendly volunteers as well. And unless you have 15 friendly volunteers, you're going to need more help than that. You're going to need a team. And so the family members are not going to be the ultimate problem. The friendly volunteers are not going to be the ultimate solution to the problem. You're going to have to use those people and likely supplement with paid help. So just know that in advance, figure out how that's going to get paid for. Typically, you know, clearing out an estate is an expense of the estate. And so whether or not the heirs agree with you is not the point. If they're not coming to help you empty the house, then you have to pay for help. And that help is an expense of the estate. So it's perfectly fine for you to spend money to get help to empty the house when no one is willing or able to come and help you. The end. Just so you know that. I will say this too. Also, there's a lot to dispose of, whether it's trash, recycling, or shredding, but also through donation or estate sale. And we're halfway through this house, and I've already taken 3 full carloads of things to donate. And these are the things that they were personal items. So she didn't feel comfortable like having the parents' clothing and shoes be in the estate sale. So she wants to sell it, but strangers walking through the house is bothering her. So a regular estate sale isn't an option. And she's really feeling uncomfortable about the personal items being sold. And so we've had to donate it all separately. So I've made, and I have a big car. So my 3 full car loads is a lot of bags. We're probably talking 60 bags at this point. And I've at least thrown away that much in trash. And we have a line of bags of shredding lined up waiting to get to the end of the paper sorting. We're going to have a truck come to do the shredding. And so these are all dispose of the trash, dispose of the recycling, deal with the shredding, deal with the donations. This is all bulk solution problems, right? You need bulk solutions to clear the house out effectively. And so people get kind of bogged down in the, I want to donate this one thing and I want to take this one thing to that charity and I want to take this one thing over there. It's like you're emptying a house and you're moving. And so you're going to have to throw away huge amounts, recycle huge amounts, shred huge amounts, and donate a huge amount. And so any bulk solution to solve that problem will make it easier on you. I've loaded my car and taken it 3 times. We filled the trash can and the neighbor's trash can, and we still had like 35 bags of trash that needed to go. And so the trash went that week, and then she was going to pay somebody to pick up the remaining trash that we generated so far and take that off to a city drive-through facility to throw it away. And like I said, the shredding is waiting. We just have a big mound of it waiting for the truck to come. So you're moving. Emptying a house is a move, and you're going to have a huge amount of stuff that you don't, you know, the family doesn't want recycling and shredding sent their way. Especially if your heirs live out of town, like somebody's there working on the house, but ultimately some of this stuff is going to get shipped or move in a moving truck. You don't want to be sending them trash, recycling, shredding, or donations. So that all stuff has to be handled locally. And then you're going to have to package up the things that are going to be sent in the truck or sent by the mail or whatever. I will say, don't forget, if you decide that you need ship boxes, that is not cheap. Sending off a bunch of memorabilia is going to be costly. It's going to be hundreds of dollars, depending on how many boxes you ship. it's not cheap to take a box of 35 pounds worth of paper and take it to UPS and say, please ship this to my sister. It's going to cost you some money. So just be prepared for that. There's not a, you know, put a few stamps on it and send the package off inexpensively. There's not that option. So unless somebody wants to come load up their luggage, put it on the plane and fly back with the keepsakes, you're going to end up spending money for transportation or shipping. And you need to know that in advance. And the estate can cover it, but the heirs need to understand that the estate is going to cover it, that it's going to be an expense that you guys have to front money for to make this stuff happen. I'm telling these tales because I don't want you to be shocked when you're standing there looking at the house going, oh my God, what am I going to do with all this stuff? You just have to keep telling yourself, this is moving. We're moving. This is us moving. And everything has to come out of the house. And it all has to have a destination. And what's different about moving is you pack it all up and it all goes to one place. But in this instance, it's going to pack up and we're going to ship some of it to my client's house where she lives out of state. And I'm going to have to have an estate person come in and sell a bunch of goods that she doesn't want to take. And then after the estate sale is over, then we're going to have to make sure everything else is out of the house. It didn't sell. And then the house is going to get sold. So unlike a regular move, there's going to be many prongs, and those prongs get, you know, there's a prong for every heir and every destination. So there's going to be a whole lot of moving parts, and being prepared to manage that task is something that nobody wants to think about and most people are overwhelmed by. And it's a perfect project to call for an organizer to come and help or pay any kind of a third party person to come and manage. And having those conversations in advance with your family to let them mull over the options while they're not grieving is a helpful thing to do for the family. And it allows your relatives, your parents to weigh in on what they think it's worth, what they think it's, what kind of effort they want you to make, what kind of recipients they want you to cover. That information will go a long way to the person that ends up on the front lines trying to manage this estate clear out. And, you know, for my client, it's me, and she's paying me for my time and effort. And thank goodness that it's something that the estate can cover. And I am halfway through the clean out of the house and going through the stuff, which is step one. And she's coming back in November. We're going to go through the rest of the stuff. And I had a team working the whole time. We had 5 days with four organizers in the house, or three organizers in the house, plus the client. So we had four people working full days for 5 days to get halfway through. And we're going to have to repeat that process again to get the other half. And then I have to pack up everything she wants to keep. I have to get a moving truck and get the furniture and boxes loaded. And that clears out, you know, a third of the contents. And then we start the process of all the things I have to do to get the rest of the stuff out of the house. So it's a process. Get ready. And this is how you can make it easier for yourself. If you involve people up front and ask for support, see how much you're going to get, and start making a plan now. And I'm going to stop talking because I'm going to cough. So who has questions at this point, Ed?
We have so many comments and questions. And I want to go back to Rowan, who had a comment and a question. Rowan said, I am so happy I was able to explain to my 96-year-old mother that things are not how I remember. So any object she wants to give away should go to other family members.
That's a good point. You made that comment somewhere else. I saw that when you made that point, it's like, what a great explanation of, I don't want all of your stuff to come to me in order to remember you. And explaining that and basically saying, I'm going to give these things away to someone else is a, you know, then you can free her up from trying to figure out what you're going to keep, which is awesome. Good plan.
And then her question was how to deal with relatives who think you should be the repository of the family history items.
Okay. isn't it convenient that somebody needs to be in charge of the family history? So what I would do instead is look around for a genealogical library and see if there is, like, there's one in Houston where families can donate genealogical history, and they take whatever you give them and file it away. And that might be a way for you to vet the paperwork down to the important papers and then donate the packet away on behalf of your family. I mean, you might want to ask them, okay, I don't know if you have any children or not, but if you don't, then, you know, you're the last man standing. So you're only going to keep it for a little while, and then somebody's got to keep it after that. So having negotiation about who's going to pick up the sword when I drop it might be a conversation to have. Let's just skip me and go straight to that younger person. And if that younger person doesn't exist, then having the conversation about where can I go and park this stuff for, so that it's part of history. And if you refuse and say, I know you think that I want it, but I don't. And so who is going to take my place? Cause I'm going to refuse it. And just sort of be the wall that says the buck stops here. I'm not taking it. If you ship it to me, I'm going to not keep it. I know it's hard. It's hard to have that conversation with family, but if you want to set that boundary for yourself, then you're going to have to set it before they start shipping stuff to you. It's going to be a conversation to have.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you draw a hard line and say, I'm not going to do anything with it, I'm not going to keep it, I don't want this stuff to come, then somebody else will have to step up. And if they don't step up, then you have to ask them, then why are we having this conversation? If you don't want it and I don't want it, then why are we having this conversation at all? If you don't want to keep it, then what is the problem? And an argument may ensue.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Connie sort of started to anticipate the weekly tittle by saying, in her early 90s, my mother-in-law started to list what should go to whom after asking us what we would like. Very smart lady. And I've mentioned before that my parents have done that. My mother had been doing that for probably the last 10 years before she passed away. And
which is great and so helpful, because there were six of y'all, and like everybody had to have, not everybody could have everything, right? So like,
yeah,
the list was really helpful.
And some people want as much as they can lay their hands on of the stuff they grew up with, and some people
don't.
Like Rowan, it's, you know, to me, like a very few things satisfy my need for that. I'm not really super sentimental about stuff. So I have a few things that particularly resonate about mom and dad, and that's about it.
Well, and like the story that I told about the video that got made, her brother only wanted one. It was a big conch shell, but that was the only thing out of the whole house that he wanted, was that one shell. And yeah, she couldn't believe that that's all he wanted, but that was as much as he wanted to take. So it was, you know, a 0.5% of the contents, right? And she was left to deal with all the rest. And she took way more than one shell. So everybody has their own feelings about the stuff and how much stuff they want. And not everybody is going to want an equal amount of everything.
Rowan also shared, Andrew Mellon, the organizer, says, remember, your grandmother's teapot is not your grandmother.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a famous quote of his, right?
There's sort of a spectrum there. There are people for whom laying hands on the physical object is really, really significant and creates the emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
And they really like to have that touchstone. And then there are other people for whom it's not important. It's important for heirs, people who know they're in line to inherit a bunch of stuff, to express your wishes and
the opinion.
personal tastes on that. And then it's also important for the people who will be leaving the stuff behind to be respectful of the wishes they hear, even though that it, you know, might make them unhappy.
Right. And I have to say too, that we don't always know what someone else will want.
Right.
As a parent, you know what you have memories of your kid's childhood around. You recognize that they play with this toy all the time, but the kid doesn't remember playing with that toy. They're attached to something else completely different. So you have to know that your memories of the objects are not your kid's memories of the objects, and they will be sentimental about something different. And you likely won't know exactly what those are unless you ask the questions. Which things are important to you in the house? Which ones do you want to have? And letting them tell you, oh, I love this thing because it reminds me of going fishing with dad, or I love this thing because I remember coming home from school and sitting, and, you know, whatever their memory stream is about the object, you won't have any idea what they have attachment and memories associated with stuff in the house. And so got to ask those questions to know what they want. And so that the person that ends up in the chair of emptying the house has some idea that that little piece of paper that looks like trash to you is a cherished heirloom for your sister. Like, you really have to have the capacity to have some input from your siblings, from your family members, what they think is important. Because as an outsider, I know better than to throw anything away without asking. And so as she's going through and looking at stuff, I'm making her touch everything because I don't know how she remembers it. I know it's a cheap piece of glass. I know it's a broken piece of wood. I know it's a painted piece of paper that is trash. But to her, that's the cup she used every night. That's the, you know, that's the piece of paper that she remembers from elementary school. It has a whole nother association for her. And so as the third party vendor here who can't have any clue what everybody's memories are, I know that she has to look at it first and make the decisions based on her memories. And all I can do is say, okay, we're at box number 20. Okay, we're at box 24. And at some point she said to me, I really don't care how many boxes it is. I'm not going to worry about it or feel guilty. I'm just going to take whatever I want. I said, okay, I'll keep packing. And so she's going to get a moving truck full of furniture and boxes at the end. And I don't have a clue where she's going to put it, but I don't live where she lives, so it's not my job to unpack it. So somebody else is going to have to deal with it on the other end. And in the meantime, in order to keep the project moving, I'm packing what she says she wants and not trying to push the issue too much, because the house has to get emptied. We got to get through this project and we got to get it on its way so they can sell the house. So is she keeping more than she's going to want? Yes. There's no sibling there to argue with her or take some of it. And she's only a couple months out from her grief. And so the end result is she's going to have a bigger problem on the other end than she would have otherwise. And that's the best that I can do for her in the moment. The end.
Okay, we are fast running out of time. I'm going to share one more comment that I really enjoyed from Marnie on Facebook, who said, please bury me with my teeth so no one wants to keep them as a souvenir.
It's not the first time, though, that I've had people, like, I brought home my mother's glasses because I remember, you know, mother's face was part also about her glasses. And so I was never going to wear them, but they're a keepsake. And I have a little pair of glasses sitting on a shelf and next to a photograph of her, because for me, that was a big part of remembering her. And I, you know, she had other glasses in the house. And so I kept one pair and I donated five, but, you know, it is a little keepsake. And yeah, the teeth, the toothbrush, people always like, oh, but this is the toothbrush that they brush. Yeah, trash. But it's hard because you feel like it's part, when you feel like you've lost the person, anything that has attachment or physical DNA on it feels like super valuable all of a sudden. Yeah, it's a weird mental process people have to go through to let the toothbrush go. Right.
Okay. We want to say a special thank you to Harley for becoming our newest Patreon supporter. If you would like to help support our efforts with a recurring monthly donation of any size, please visit cfhou.com/Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Your contributions help us offset the cost of producing the weekly webcast and will also help us fund new projects that we have in the works. Thank you for support, Harley, and all of our generous underwriters.
Thank you so much, Harley. We appreciate you. Okay, so the weekly title is called You Really Can't Take It With You. This week's assignment is about estate clearing and generally preparing for one. So we want you to think about the stuff that you're planning to leave to family members or friends and consider giving it away now so that they can start enjoying it right away, so that you know that it goes to the person that you intend, and then it's one less thing that whoever is in charge of your estate has to manage. So think about that, you know, process. Can you give those things away now? If you're not ready to give them away now, then you can do as our listener suggested and start a list of bequests. You can create a guide. This painting needs to go to this person. This chair needs to go to that person. This needs to go to that donation place, whatever. So you can make your list of where you think things should go. And who should get them, so that the estate person that manages your stuff doesn't have to try to figure that out. And the heirs can see on the list that that's where it was, they suggested that it go. And then the last thing is you can make a list of charities that you want to support with your estate. So if they're going to have to go and make a bunch of donations, then if you have a favorite charity, someplace that you volunteer, some, place whose work you like to support, then you can say, I would really like you to donate all my stuff to this place or that place or this place, and make some designations about what would make you feel good to have your goods turn into money to support a charity, and give them some guidance about how to manage your contents. That would be very helpful for anybody that wanted to do that. If you could say these things need to go to these people and these things need to be donated to these charities, giving them a list to work from, super helpful.
Okay.
That's our tip for this week.
We are out of time. I want to remind everyone that we'll be back next week, Tuesday, October 26th, 2021 at noon U.S. Central Time, live in Zoom and streaming on Facebook. Some of us love to shop, and the stores and online retailers that have stuff to sell know how to push our buttons to make the sale. But it's easy for our spaces to get out of balance if we bring home more than we're using up, giving away, or getting rid of. In our next episode, we'll offer strategies for resisting the onslaught of marketing messages to right-size our shopping. Join us on October 26th for Resistance is Not Futile, Avoid or Escape the Consumerist Mindset.
We're going to do our best to talk in this upcoming holiday season, when everybody gets real serious about, you know, convincing you to buy, and you get real serious about buying stuff. And so we're going to start talking about your shopping habits at the entrance to the great shopping gauntlet that is coming. Okay. And we will see you guys next week. Thank you.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we'd love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. I was way ahead of you there. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or subscribe to our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. And you can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Thanks, you guys. We're glad to see you, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.